faces in person. It will be nice to see you all in person, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later. But until then, I appreciate the technology that we have to make this work, and we're going to get started. Today is Thursday, May 20th, 2021. The time is 9:45 a.m. and welcome to the May meeting of the Regional Growth Committee for Wasatch Front Regional Council. My name is Dawn Ramsey, and I have the privilege of chairing this, and we'll be conducting this meeting today. We're going to turn it over to Andrea and ask for a roll call for introductions. Andrea, would you do that for us?
Thank you, you bet. As usual, I'll just read names across the screen. We have Robert Dandoy, Andrea Pearson, Beth Holbrook, Ted Knowlton, Len Arvey, Laura Hansen, Jory Johnner, Mark Allen, Brett Milburn, Jim Harvey, Michaela Jordan, Ginger Chin, Don Hugh Van Wagnen, Megan Townsend, Patty Garver, Jory Howell, Hannah Betcher, hope I did that right, Andrew Gruber, Miranda Jones-Cox, G.J. Labonte, Ben Hewitt, Nicole Mendelson, Ryan Beck, Lauren Victor, Jenny Wilson, Ron Bigelow, Christopher Chestnut, Bill Baranowski, Rosie Hernandez, Kevin Van Tassel, Ben Wethrich, John Larson, Kurt Maurer, Ned Hacker, Andrea Olson, Robert McConnell, Grant Farnsworth, Julie Bjornsted, Shul Bishop, Badir Almadi, Nate Peterson, Nikki Navio, JC Skinner, and that will do it. Thank you, Mayor Ramsey.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that, Andrea, as always. Thanks for keeping us going. Okay, the first item on our agenda that we need to cover is approving the minutes from our last meeting, our March 18th, 2021 meeting. Those minutes were sent out. Has anyone had an opportunity to review those minutes, and can I get a motion to approve them?
Len Arvey, I'll move to approve.
Thank you, Mayor. Can I get a second?
I'll second.
Okay, I couldn't hear for sure who that included, but I heard the word Dandoy. So Mayor Dandoy, I'm going to take that second from you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any discussion or amendments to the minutes? All right, seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes from our March 18th, 2021 meeting, please say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Those minutes are approved. Thank you. Okay, we have Laura Hansen here with us, and we always love having Laura here, but she's wearing a very different hat this time. Laura has traded in her UTA hat for a new role at GOPB, which is also the new name for GOMB. Anyway, Laura, we're going to ask you if you would take just a few minutes and kind of introduce your role and tell us what you'll be doing now.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mayor. I have a new job. I started a week ago, Monday, as the state planning coordinator and kind of the managing director of all state planning coordination tasks. And so about half of the job will be focused on working with internal state agencies, helping them better coordinate and think forward into the future. But the other half is working with MPOs, AOGs, transit districts, local governments. And that part of the job is really far less defined. And so I would love to have any suggestions from you all on what role would be helpful if you see a gap or a hole in planning and leadership from the state. So if you have any recommendations for me, please feel free to reach out to me. I'll put my new contact info in the chat. And I'm just delighted that I get to continue to join this meeting. So thank you.
Well, go ahead. Did you have something else you wanted to say?
Nope, that's it. Thanks. All right.
Thank you. We appreciate still having you here. And, you know, we have a lot of talented people in the state, but it's hard for me to think of anybody that I could imagine would be better at heading this up as the state planning coordinator. Really, Laura, thank you for your willingness to serve the state of Utah. And we look forward to working with you in a variety of capacities. I think we'll all have, you know, a little bit different. As you said, part of that is undefined and broad, and it'll be a little different for each of these areas that you work with. We look forward to working with you. So thank you.
Mayor. Right.
Yes, Andrew.
Hi, may I make a brief comment along this line, please? I just want to echo how excited we are for Laura to be over at GOPB with Sophia DeCaro, and it's going to be great working with her. Now, our longtime UTA friend, GJ Labonte, who is on this call with us, is now serving in at least in an interim role as the planning director for UTA. So I just wanted to make sure everybody knows that. A lot of people know GJ already, so he's terrific. So it'll be seamless there. And then just while we're at it, Mayor, I just want to acknowledge also Ginger Chin being with us, who, I mean, a lot of people know Ginger from a variety of her great roles over time, but Ginger, you've just taken a new role at the chamber. So can we just tell us, take just a few seconds and tell us about that role?
Sure. Thank you, Andrew. So I just joined the chamber. This is my first week, and I'm the vice president of public policy, and I get the great opportunity to work alongside JC Skinner. So she'll be doing the government relations, and I'll be heading up a lot of the committees here at the chamber. So I'm really excited to be working with you all. So thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Dream team at the chamber, Ginger and JC. Thanks a lot, Mayor.
No problem. I appreciate you making sure to point that out. And yeah, dream team, I agree. I thought, in fact, I even wrote a note here as Ginger, as you were talking and saying you were going to do the public policy and working with JC, I thought, yeah, that's a win. That's a good team. So that's great. Thank you. Okay, we are now going to open our public comment period. If there's any member of the public here that would like to address the committee, the time is now yours. We ask you to turn on your camera and give us your name, and we'll give you a couple minutes if there's anyone who'd like to speak. I'm scrolling back and forth between screens trying to catch everyone, and I don't see anyone. Okay. Seeing none, we will close the public comment portion of this and move on to agenda item number 3, our Wasatch Choice 2023 through 2050 Regional Transportation Plan. You all know what this is. we've all spent a great deal of time on this and talking about this and working on this. But one of the roles that we fill here at the Regional Growth Committee is being the steering committee for the Regional Transportation Plan. That's what we do as this committee. That's one of our significant roles. And I just want to give a little reminder, probably preaching to the choir here, but the transportation component, the RTP is the transportation component to the overall Wasatch Choice vision. This matters. It's important. It's part of our Utah Unified Transportation Plan. And today, in our steering committee role, if you will, we're going to revisit the objectives and the process for the regional transportation plan. And we're going to focus on a key area, really improving our region's resiliency. I'm going to turn it over to Ted Knowlton, who's deputy director here at Wasatch Front Regional Council. And Ted, I'm going to let you lead this discussion.
Thank you, Mayor. I assume that it says it's loading. So just, it's always fun to have issues with your internet just when you're doing this. Let me try one more time. Thank you.
The good news is,
no one on this. Why don't you go ahead and share it?
We've all been there and done that over the last, 15 months. It's happened to everyone. So you're in good company.
Okay. Thanks, Mayor. Okay, great. Next slide. Mayor Ramsey already talked about this. Last meeting in March, we talked about Wasatch Choice. And so when you think regional transportation plan, think that's one of the three legs of the stool for Wasatch Choice. The other two are your long-term local vision, each community, and also economic development, what happens there locally, as well as the comprehensive economic development strategy. So the regional transportation plan is easily the biggest thing that we focus on in terms of overall staff effort here at Wasatch Front Regional Council. Go to the next slide, if you would. Now, and Mayor Ramsey also talked about this, but I wanted to just give you a high level that, the name of the organization is also the name of the board, the Wasatch Front Regional Council. We know this. A regional growth committee serves that long-range planning role, oversees the vision and the regional transportation plan. The corollary and short range programming is the Transportation Coordinating Committee. So you and the Transportation Coordinating Committee, TRANSCOM, we call it, provide that key advice and recommendation to Wasatch Front Regional Council. And you can see how it relates also to the Active Transportation Committee and technical advisory committees. Hugh, go ahead to the next slide. So when we're talking about the regional transportation plan, here's where I'm headed. I'm gonna do a quick overview of the regional transportation plan. We're gonna talk a little bit about the objectives looking forward. Today, we're setting the stage to then go through more detailed pieces over the next handful of coming meetings. All right, so this kind of sets the foundation. We're drilling into resiliency, and then we get into more details in coming meetings. But high level, regional transportation plan, it addresses automobility, transit, public transportation, active transportation. It coordinates with how growth is unfolding and how your communities are changing. It's updated every 4 years. The next update is anticipated and planned on in 2023. That box around the dollar signs means it's fiscally constrained. So we project the revenue that we think we all will have to spend on transportation. We live within that projected budget. It conforms to air quality standards. That's that little air quality icon. And it's prioritized. So it's the projects and improvements are prioritized into buckets or phases that are approximately 10 years long, phases 1, 2, and 3. So that's just very high level. That is a key, our plan is a key component then in turn of Utah's unified transportation plan, which is, as far as we know, unique in the nation, and we're all really proud of it. Let's go to the next slide. Very generally in this cycle, those of you that were with the Regional Growth Committee last year know that we got feedback from you on external forces, including COVID-19. But also new technologies. We're going to talk a little bit about that, those briefly today. This year, we're gathering project ideas and testing them. Big milestone for that will be this fall.
I know.
And then in the next 2 years, we'll start getting into the details. What's the phasing and implementation of those projects? Let's go to the next one. So these are the goals for the process, right? The things that we've talked with you about accomplishing in this four-year cycle. We always start with engaging communities, partner agencies, stakeholders, and the public in the planning process. Because in the last cycle, we developed a from scratch Wasatch Choice regional vision. This is a time to focus on implementing the regional vision. Next. This is a newer or a stronger focus area for us and a key part of today's meeting, addressing external forces, those things that we can't really control, in uncertainties, with an eye towards improving resilience. How can we ensure that we have a great transportation system and great cities and a great region, even in the face of these kinds of uncertainties? Next. Now, related to that a bit, a core thing that we do, of course, is with you all, with our partner agencies, plan out project improvements, how to spend money. But there are a bunch of things that we all can do to improve mobility and get us to the destinations we need to get to, in addition to spending money. We're calling those policies, and that's a key part of what we want to talk about today and explore that in this planning cycle. As always, we'll coordinate the regional transportation with local land use considerations and plans. That might even mean on individual corridors. So we'll drill down into that more in the coming meetings. And we are stepwise in the process at WFRC of utilizing a performance-based approach to planning. So let's use data and information to inform what we're doing. Let's seek to understand our region's issues and problems better with data and seek to better understand how our plans actually improve our overall performance. Today, focusing more on 3 and 4, and then in the next meeting, focusing a bit more on new project ideas and drilling down perhaps in the next steps in working together. Okay, let's go to the next one. Hugh, take it away. Hugh Van Wagenen.
Good. So, as everybody knows, our region is growing and changing, and things could look significantly different in the year 2050. So as part of our current RTP effort, the long-range planning team has been coordinating with partners and stakeholders to ask the question, well, what is life going to be like in 2050? And how do we get at this question? So as Ted mentioned, we've been looking at what we're calling external forces, 6 external forces that we anticipate to really affect transportation in 2050. Again, you may recall we reviewed these forces with you last year, but I'll go over them again briefly and update you on where we're at with them today in our process. So the first one you see on your screen, connected and autonomous vehicles. Autonomous vehicles, as you may get from the title, vehicles that are capable of driving without human intervention, self-driving or driverless vehicles. A connected vehicle is one that communicates with other vehicles, infrastructure on the road, and other road users via wireless technology. And we're seeing this already come into play in new models of cars today. Second one up there, high-tech transit systems. Transit systems, using what's called intelligent transportation systems technology to improve transit reliability and speed and prepare the way for autonomous transit vehicles. Micromobility refers to the use of lightweight devices that are typically used for shorter distance transport, right? E-bikes, electric scooters, and there's new devices coming out all the time that have improved motor technology. On-demand travel and sharing services, simply put, these are the Uber and Lyfts of the world, but it's the use of technology in the form of a mobile application enables you to call and secure a ride with a click of a button. So e-commerce and delivery, refers to a series of changes that are occurring in the way people purchase goods and how those goods are delivered. Many of you have seen more Amazon trucks in your neighborhoods these days than ever before. So obviously internet shopping, even food delivery, but things like truck automation and platooning, last mile delivery logistics, even the use of drones, things that encompass this area. And then lastly, we're all more or less familiar with telecommuting these days, but definitely a work arrangement in which an employee works outside the office, often working from home or a remote location. So based on research and partner input, we've grouped these forces that you see into 3 different scenarios that may play out in the future, comparing them to our baseline or our current regional transportation plan.
Let me just add to that the recovery and impacts of COVID-19 are kind of flowing through all of this.
Thank you. Yes. Thanks, Ted, for clarifying that. So this first scenario, we're looking at and say, well, this is a future where automation has a high implementation rate. Another future, it's a high shared mobility implementation rate. And then a third future, looking at high e-living implementation. So grouped into these 3 scenarios. Eventually, we'll develop a scenario that is a plausible mixture of implementation of all of these different forces. And that's something that we're working on at the moment. So today, we want to talk to you a little bit more about the policies. That was the forces. Now we'll get into the policies a little bit. And what you can see on your screen here, can sort of categorize the state and regional policies and then local policies. So we'll go over these individually in a moment. With the exception of center development that you see in your lower left-hand portion of your screen. Centers enhance mobility and accessibility and are an important part of transportation strategy moving forward. But we've been talking to you about center development for some time, and so we will forego that in detail today. But as we review these additional policies, please keep in mind that the timeframe of the RTP looks forward to 2050. And so you may look at these and some may feel more appropriate in the near term, while some may need more time to mature throughout the 2050 planning horizon. So the first one I'll just cover here is the road usage charge. And many of you are familiar with this. It's called the RUC program, something that UDOT has a trial with at the moment. And a road usage charge is a usage-based fee based on certain rate per mile traveled and that will complement gas taxes. Second policy here is managed lanes, also something that is in development at some level throughout the state. These are really smart freeways that prevent congestion by continuously monitoring traffic flows and controlling freeway access using state-of-the-art technologies, including coordinated ramp signaling, variable speed limit, and variable message signs, as well as lane use management. So just optimizing the efficiency of freeways and major arterial roads. Now, Rosie, if you're with me, we actually have a poll. I'd like Rosie to pop up to ask you a little bit about managed lanes and get a take for your thoughts on this. And as this poll comes up, pretty simple. But if you have thoughts, concerns, questions about this specific policy, please throw that in the chat bar after you've done the poll here. And we will be collecting all of those comments in the chat and addressing them in upcoming meetings and our fall workshops that we do. So collecting this information from you as we go through these policies will help us understand key questions and things to consider moving forward as we continue to collaborate with stakeholders and partners. And Rosie, I'll just leave it to you to, it's not too tough. So hopefully everybody can finish this up rather quickly.
On all of these questions at this point, we're in exploration mode and are gathering the things to consider during exploration. You as the steering committee would make any recommendation about what actually gets incorporated into the plan as we head towards 2023.
Thanks, Ted. Rosie, maybe go ahead and close that. Okay, great. That's awesome. We'll move on to the next question. All right, or the next policy, I should say. So fare free transit, policy decision to remove the barrier of paying for transit services. So this can be done system-wide or within designated zones. Many of you may be familiar with the free fare zone in downtown Salt Lake City. So again, Rosie, if you can pull up a poll on this specific policy, it'd be great. Thank you. Again, if there are any thoughts, feel free to throw them into the chat so we can have those recorded. And I'll give a little countdown here just to make this easy, but I'm gonna go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, thank you. All right. There we go. That's great. We'll move on. So this next one is congestion pricing, which is essentially administering a toll for vehicles to enter a cordoned area. And this shifts some rush hour travel to off-peak periods or other transportation modes, taking advantage of the fact that the majority of rush hour drivers are not necessarily commuters. Ted, is there anything you want to add on this before we pull up our poll question?
We know that this comes across and hits as a fairly controversial item. It might be that this has a much longer lead. The theory of this is that it's good for the economy in that it helps commuters plan for a much more predictable and quick commute. It's good for freight for the same reason. And if it's done in a revenue neutral way, that money can actually be used in ways that help offset some of the equity impacts by, for example, improving public transportation in the same corridors. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of that theory behind it.
Thanks. Rosie, do you mind pulling that question up? Thank you. Again, just a few more seconds here. We'll do a 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, thank you for the feedback. It's great. next policy, street connectivity. So now I think we're definitely into to local policies. So multiple routes and connections serving the same origins and destinations relative to external forces. A connected network helps amplify the potential benefits of micromobility technologies that serve first and last mile problems, which would in turn help reduce single occupant vehicle usage in those locations. Rosie, can you pull that question up, please? Thank you. So in regards to street connectivity, how much interest do you think communities have in improving it?
Hey, Hugh, can I ask a question? Would you maybe kind of explain what communities that are already built can do? I think street connectivity sounds to me like the kind of thing that you have more control over with new development, but as far as communities that are already developed, can you maybe give us a better example of what an existing community could do or what kind of policies would be you're talking about here?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, Mayor. Thank you for asking. And I'll give it my best and then maybe turn to Ted to see if he can add or anybody else. And I would think that sometimes that is really difficult. You would certainly look for redevelopment opportunities when those happen to increase your connectivity within your city. And I also think that when we think of street connectivity, right, my mind kind of goes to cars and full access, but there are also other ways to improve connectivity for other users like pedestrians and people using bikes or other modes. And so are there easements or alleyways that can connect between cul-de-sacs or get through to commercial developments? And so maybe those smaller improvements in connectivity also help make the network more porous for individual folks to use. Ted, is anything you want to add to that? It's a great question.
You nailed it, Hugh. And I just would slightly elaborate that one avenue of connectivity that we can explore is better connectivity between private developments that are not necessarily even utilizing public rights of way. You know, can a person get to all of the adjacent businesses in one block, or do they have to go out to the street to do those kinds of things?
Ask a question just about the intent of this question. So it's how much interest communities might have. Is that how much interest that we as respondents are interested in this topic, or how much we think other communities, how receptive they might be?
I think that's a perfect question, Laura. And we were thinking if you all are wearing your hat as the steering committee for you know, Wasatch Choice Regional Vision and the long range plan, that you're kind of representing local government in this space. I mean, street connectivity is a well known strategy. It would be useful, just like the mayor did, by saying, well, how does this play out in built out communities, for you to not just reflect on the applicability or issues for your individual community, but think about it more broadly about communities writ large here in the Wasatch Front.
And Ted, this is Len Arvey. Are you asking how much they actually have or how much they should have? I mean, everybody wants to live on a cul-de-sac, but that's not very productive.
I think it's just kind of the idea of improving wherever a region is, wherever a community is now. Are there improvements that can be made, or is there interest in exploring that? Are there issues in exploring those kinds of improvements? I'll unpack this just a tiny bit in saying, you know, are we thinking about how state MPOs funding can help local governments accomplish street connectivity improvements? So there might be ways to work on this that are not solely local, but ultimately anything on this piece, it would really need to work with where a local government wants to go in their planning and their master street planning.
Hey, Ted, let me just add to Mayor Arvey's question also. All of this is prospective. All of this is what is going to happen over the next 20 to 30 years in our region, as we're the fastest growing state in the country. And we know that we can't absorb all of that demand and all that travel demand just by building new capacity. It's impossible to do that. So the this whole effort is to think about what are the strategies and the policies that could be utilized so that we don't get completely choked with traffic. And, you know, we don't have the money to do, even if it would work to build our way out of congestion, we don't have the money to do so. So I think all of these are potential strategies to be used or therefore incorporated into the regional transportation plan and Wasatch Choice vision going forward. So I'd say think broadly as this committee, as the regional growth committee, think broadly and think long-term with the understanding that all of this will have to be coordinated with North Salt Lake, Roy City, Salt Lake County, you know, all of the communities that are individually come together to make up this body.
You're going to hear more from Julie, go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to say, in response to Mayor Ramsey's question, a few years ago, UTA, UDOT, WPRC, and MAG produced a street connectivity guidebook that helps communities both measure connectivity and also provided some recommendations for how to improve existing and how to plan for new infrastructure to improve connectivity. That guidebook is on our website. And then I just wanted to plug that TLC funds can be used for street connectivity studies. So if a community is interested in this, especially built out communities, we do have funding available to go more in depth on this issue at your local level.
That's really great information. Thanks, Julie.
Ted, Andrew, this is Steve Shields with Herman City. Just a quick question. How do you propose you would negotiate and or mediate ideas where there's communities that don't want connectivity? For example, one of our neighboring cities respectfully has declined connectivity to preserve some of the vision they have for their city, which is somewhat different than maybe some of our other neighboring cities. So that's one question. How do we do that? And then second question is, how do we, for us on Harriman on the west is different than if you're Riverton or South Jordan. When they provide connectivity to our residents, that allows a lot more volume of roads that are in their city. And so how do they manage the maintenance and upkeep of those roads when they're connecting to areas that have increasing population like Harriman does?
I can do a couple of quick reactions. One point is that the UDOT in their prioritization process, how they allocate the transportation investment fund, for example, they actually have local street connectivity as part of that decision-making process. So when a local government improves their street connectivity, they are rewarded by scoring better on a project. And so it's part of that kind of decision-making process a bit. Council Member Shields, your second question is really an interesting and challenging one. And I'll just note that street connectivity overall, it tends to reduce the amount of miles of driving on our facilities because people can travel more as the crow flies. But I think that you're getting at a really important equity consideration that if that traffic flow moves from a state to a local facility, are there some ways that we should think about how we deal with that? And I think that that's the kind of thing that we hoped to flush out here today. So it's a great question for us to dig into.
A lot of interest, very healthy. Thank you. These are great questions and certainly things we'll follow up on and when willing to take more offline conversation about. Rosie, do you mind just pulling up, closing and pulling up the results on this one? Okay, awesome. Thank you. We'll get to the next one. It's called curbside management. this is policies and practices to allocate curb space, right, in the public right of way to different uses, right? We've mentioned Uber and Lyft, right, those sharing services, but also transit, bus stops. Where's the space for those options? Freight, lots of drop-offs, again, increasing these days, passenger pickup, just traditional vehicle parking, even micromobility device parking and public space. So Rosie, if you could pull up the question on curbside management. So again, looking at curbside management approaches, what interest is there? And again, maybe I'll squeeze everybody in here quickly just due to time, but 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, terrific, thanks. Local street design modifications. So policies that improve the suitability of roads for a variety of transportation modes through design and speed modifications. Rosie, go ahead and pull that up. And I think this is really looking at, you know, what kind of design standards does your city have? If you'd be interested in exploring local street design, what kind of interest is there? And again, I'll do a 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, thank you very much. I believe this is the last one that we have today in the modernization of parking. So policies and practices that consider elimination of parking minimums, adoption of paid parking, unbundled parking costs, that would be with development, and impact of autonomous vehicles. What's that going to do to parking needs in the future?
I'll just add in really briefly on this one, which is that this is one that we have on the list in part also because parking has been so affected by new technology, Uber, Lyft, new ways of getting around, and it's being affected by telework and COVID-19 market shifts.
Thanks, Ted. Rosie, if you would. Thanks. So looking at parking modernization in communities. And again, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Terrific, okay. Thanks, Rosie, really appreciate your help on that. So thanks to everybody for your feedback today and questions. It looks like there's some things in the chat. I haven't looked at them yet, but we'll keep everything and again, be prepared to look at these in future meetings and in workshops. Are there any additional reflections about potential policies?
Yeah, this is Len Arvey, and this is just, I'm on the League of Cities and Towns, on the board for the League of Cities and Towns, and I don't know how this should be incorporated, but I understand that the legislature is gonna make a big push this year to try and limit our zoning abilities and our impact fees, which limits our ability to pay for a lot of things that we need to pay for here. And so I think if that happens, we either need to figure out how these things will be managed centrally, or, I mean, it could be not at all, which makes planning very difficult, but potential regulatory problems are out there on the horizon as well, which could affect all of this.
Thank you, Mayor. Okay. So again, just a reminder of our four-year process, where we're at, where we're going. And with that, I'll just turn last words over to you, Ted.
And I'll just note that in that steering committee role, this fall is a really important time where we'll talk about specific planning projects, transportation investments. We'll also drill down on some of these policies. And so we look forward to drilling down on those things with you in the next few regional growth committee meetings. Mayor, I think that's the end of this agenda item, unless there's anything else we should talk about in it.
Thank you so much. I think this gives us a lot to talk about looking at the future. There's there's a lot of work to be done and a lot to figure out as we try to manage growth and make things better. Thank you for this discussion. I think it's something we'll probably have a great deal of discussion about as an organization, and I look forward to it. Okay, item four on our agenda is an action item. We have an amendment to make. It's amendment number 3 to the 2019 to 2050 Regional Transportation Plan. Now, just a little background, a reminder. Many of us remember this, but I just want to provide some context. Every 4 years, we approve the Regional Transportation Plan. We adopt it, I should say. And it's a living plan that can be amended, and occasionally it is amended to accommodate new considerations that come up. Amending the plan is collaborative, and it's a rigorous process. It's not something that's done lightly, because so much work goes into this plan that an amendment really has to go through the appropriate process as well. And that's what we're here to do today. We have the largest amendment in WFRC's history to the plan, really as a result of the funding that was approved by the legislature this last session, the most significant transportation infrastructure funding that the state has ever done at one time. And that means we have some amendments to make as well to be in concert with that and to go along with it. So I'm going to turn the time over to Jory Johnner with WFRC. He's the Long Range Planning Manager, and Julie Bornstad, Senior Transportation Planner here at WFRC, to introduce the amendments and the actions that we need to consider today.
Hey, thanks, Mayor. So today, Jory and I would like to briefly review the Regional Transportation Plan amendment process, along with one staff level project, 8 proposed board level amendment projects, and 13 full amendment projects to the 2019 to 2050 Regional Transportation Plan. I'll then ask if there's any questions from the Regional Growth Committee, ask that you open this item up for public comment, and then ask for a motion to approve the 8 board level draft amendments and release 13 full amendments to public comment. If you'd like to follow along with the individual projects when we get there, those are each in your packet. So the Wasatch Choice Vision is our community's shared vision for transportation investments, development patterns, and economic opportunities. The vision and its key strategies help ensure and enhance quality of life even as we grow. Wasatch Choice envisions transportation investments and interrelated land use and economic development decisions that achieve desired local and regional outcomes. And the Regional Transportation Plan is the transportation component of the overall Wasatch Choice vision. So Ted touched briefly on this, or more than briefly on this during his presentation. Just want to put it back up there that the phases for the 2019 plan are 2019 to 2030 for phase one. Phase two is 2031 to 2040. And then phase three is 2041. To 2050. So periodically adjustments are needed during our planning cycles to do things like changes in funding availability, local or state needs, changes to land use. We've streamlined the amendment process and this over the last year and a half, but we also maintain the rigor of the planning process, including review of financial constraints, public input, and air quality conformity. And over the last year, you, the RGC, have made 2 amendments to the 2019 and 2050 RTP. And so this is our 3rd amendment. It should be noted that there are different categories of amendments based on level of significance, and each level has a slightly different process. The process for level 1 amendments with our staff modifications include coordinating with the chair and vice chair of RGC, and then final approval by the WFRC Executive Director. This process requires informing our RGC Technical Advisory Committees and you as the Regional Growth Committee. The process for level 2, which are board modifications, include review of technical considerations consistent with our planning process for the RTP, and review and recommendations by our TACs, and then final approval by the Regional Growth Committee. And level 3 is a full amendment, and these are for regionally significant projects which require technical considerations, air quality conformity, and a 30-day public comment period, and needs final approval by the regional council. So level 1 amendments are smaller type projects, under $10 million for roads, under $5 million for transit, things like corridor preservation, and individual active transportation projects. On the other side are level 3 full amendments, and these are for all regionally significant roads. So those are principal arterials or higher, and fixed guideways for transit. And then sort of all other projects fall in that middle level, level two, which includes regional land use centers and full active transportation master plan updates. So during the last legislative session, the state was very favorable towards transportation. The House Bill 433 programmed one-time funds at about $700 million statewide for roadways. The W4C area received three projects, Bangor Highway Interchange in Riverton, and then in Roy, a 56 South Wining project, and then improvements to the I-15 interchange at 56 South. HB 433 also allowed for about $200 million to go to go to double tracking a front runner along the greater Wasatch Front. So these are spot improvements of front runner. And then there was another bill, Senate Bill 2, which gave one-time funds of $35 million for active transportation projects throughout the state. And then the legislature also asked that the Transportation Commission and UDOT program the Transportation Investment Fund out to 2030 at about $4.3 billion. So these three actions combined have resulted in the main reason why we need to amend the RTP and this amendment. So as Mayor Ramsey said, this is one of the largest, if not the largest, amendment that W4C has ever done. And it's not necessarily because there's a lot of new projects. You can see some fun facts about this amendment. There's really no new road or transit projects. Again, most of these are because of that sort of planning for that increase of funding available to us in the first 10 years of our RTP. So here's an overview of all of the project centers and plans by level in this amendment. Jory will review these projects with you. Again, these are in your packet if you'd like to follow along, and please stop him if you have any questions or need additional clarification as we go through the projects. I'll be watching the chat and try to answer any questions that you have there.
Thanks, Julie. And yes, stop me if you have any questions. The following projects have been reviewed by the W4C staff and the chair and vice chair of the Regional Growth Committee and is presented for your information only. So the first project is the Three Gate Trail. It's a new 2.8 mile off-street trail adjacent to the I-15 corridor, extending from 5600 South to the West Gate. Julie, you want to hit the next slide? This project will be added to the Regional Active Transportation Network and will provide transportation choices to the Hill Air Force Base and Falcon Hill employees and eventually connect to the Roy and Clearfield Front Runner stations. The next eight projects need your review and recommendation, as Julie made mention, as they fall into the level two category. These projects include project modifications, Regional Active Transportation Plan changes, and Wasatch Choice Center modifications. So the first project on this list is the Forest Street Grade Separated Railroad Crossing, received House Bill 433, pass-through funds, and will improve safety and reliability. The project is recommended to be moved from phase three to phase one. South Bench Drive has two requests from South Weber City. One is to adjust the alignment between I-84 and South Weber Drive, and the other is to remove the portion of South Weber Drive up the hill slope to Layton City. This change will sync up with the recently adopted city general plan. 7800 South from State Route 111 to 5600 West is approved surface transportation program, the STP funds that WFRC programs, and needs to be moved from phase three to phase one to align the transportation improvement program and the regional transportation plan. The project improves local mobility and access to upcoming developments. The next three proposed amendments are active transportation plan amendments from Draper City, Sandy City, and West Jordan City. These active transportation plans utilize the Transportation Land Use Connection Grant Program funded by WFRC, UDOT, UTA, and Salt Lake County, and will update the regional and local bicycle facilities in the regional transportation plan. The Murray Fashion Place Center will expand the existing center and join it with an adjacent neighborhood center to form a new urban center. This center will increase connectivity between the mall and medical center, neighborhood connectivity, and promote transit and active transportation. It will line up the Murray Fashion Place West Small Area Plan with the Wasatch Choice Regional Vision. It is expected the center will start developing in the first 10 years of the plan. The next 13 projects need your review and recommendation for public comment as they fall into the level 3 category. These projects are regionally significant and include UTA fixed guideways and UDOT freeway projects. The first project is recommending to move the Front Runner double tracking strategic locations in all three counties from phase 2 to phase 1. This project has recently received one-time funding in the form of the bond from the legislature and will receive bonding through the TTIP program. So one-time money and the bonding through TTIP. The S line streetcar will be extended from its current termini on McClellan Street to Highland Drive, providing better access and visibility to the surrounding areas from one-time funding from the legislature. This project is part of two separate streetcar extensions to Salt Lake City and Mill Creek. It is recommended to give this segment its own ID and place it in phase 1. The I-15 interchange on 5600 South recently completed its environmental study to rebuild the interchange and widen 5600 West from I-15 to 3500 West in Roy. The original interchange in the plan was just an upgrade. The recommendation is to update the project cost and description in the plan to align with the HB 433 funding the project is expected to receive. I-15 in Southern Davis County from Farmington to Salt Lake City currently has original sections of pavement from the 1970s and is in the current plan to reconstruct and widen the freeway. The project will start the environmental study this year, and it is expected that this project will be funded with transportation investment funds between 2025 and 2030. The project is currently in phase 3 and it is recommended to be moved to phase 1. As a result of funding become available sooner than anticipated, the improvements in phase 1 from 2600 South to Bountiful to Salt Lake County can be deleted as they will be included in the greater reconstruction and widening project. The I-15 widening project in Salt Lake County from 2100 South to Bangor Highway is currently in the RTP, and after review, it is recommended that the project costs and extents be adjusted from I-215 interchange in the south to 600 South. This project is expected to receive funding through the TIF program tomorrow at the Transportation Commission meeting. Another relook at I-15 in Salt Lake County recommends that the I-15 collector and distributor system project extends from I-215 interchange to Bangor Highway be adjusted to start at 90th South. The piece north from 215 to 90th South has recently been completed. The project costs are also being recommended to be updated to match the expected TIF allocations. Converting Bangor to a freeway is expected to be included in the package of projects being funded from the TIF to 2030. Currently, the RTP has minor interchange improvements and a system-to-system improvement at the Bangor Highway and State Route 201 interchange. It is anticipated that this project funded will include the complete system-to-system interchange, therefore allowing for the removal of the interchange upgrade. This removal helps with the overall financial constraint of the plan. Mountain View Corridor extension in the Utah County and completion as a freeway south of Old Bingham Highway is expected to be included in the 2030 TIF programming. The project shown here and on the next slide reflects cost and extent modifications to align with the expected TIF program with the RTP. The northern portion from Old Bingham Highway to 134 South also recommends a phase change from phase 2 to phase 1. The last level 3 project is an update to Highway 89 and the I-84 interchange. This project is currently in the RTP as a system-to-system interchange in phase 1 at $300 million. The Transportation Commission has allocated funding to make short-term interchange improvements, i.e. a SPUI, single point urban interchange, from the TIF program. These improvements will help with the current construction, under construction Highway 89 freeway project interface better with the I-84 for the next decade. It is recommended that the full system-to-system interchange be moved to phase 2. By doing this, we, the collective we, are able to maintain the financial constraint of all three phases of the 2019 to 2050 regional transportation plan. If there are no other questions, I'll now hand the remainder of the presentation back to Julie to discuss technical considerations and the schedule.
Hey, Jory.
Yes, Mayor.
It's Norm Searle, excuse me, Norm Searle, Riverdale Mayor. You mentioned on that three-gate trail that it would extend from the Roy Gate to the West Gate in Clearfield. I didn't have time to read your slide. You put up the whole thing, but the meetings I've been in, the idea is to purchase that UP rail through there, that unused rail system all the way to Ogden. And that way that commuters, well, it could go, people come from Ogden bicycle and from the intermodal station, they could go to Hill Air Force Base, they can go by the Ogden Airport. There's a lot of new development planned there. I just think it's a great thing for the whole thing to go all the way into Ogden, because then commuters that live in Clearfield, Roy, Riverdale, they can go to Ogden on their bicycles to work. So I don't know. Is that the plan right now, or is that?
I love that idea. I have not heard of the plans extending this to the north. Hugh, have you heard anything from Ogden or Maida on the connection?
No, I haven't. And Mayor Searle, it's exciting to hear that. And we'd love to hear more about it and who you're speaking with. Right now, it's just been Maida that we've been in touch with, you know, who'd have the land authority over this section. But love to see it extend further north.
Let me mention this issue. The meetings I've been in have been with Davis County, Weber County commissioners. It's been with Riverdale. It's been with Roy City, it's been with Maida, it's been with everybody. They were going to purchase that whole stretch all the way into Ogden, and that seems real. And that way, even I know Mayor Caldwell's on board with this. There was even UTA's been involved in these meetings, and that they're looking at even a potential down the road. There's a 100-foot right wide right of way. They can even a potential for a light rail through that area in the future years for transportation. So I think the whole idea was to purchase that whole rail line all the way across there. So I hope they're looking at that. They sure are up on this end of the state. So
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, this is Mayor Dandoy. Jory, everything that Norm just said was absolutely correct. Those conversations have been taking place over the last few months. And as he indicated, they have been looking at that entire corridor. So it might be wise, if we can, to have the Midas instead of the funding plan for funding of this project, at least initially. Maybe they should consider briefing this particular committee in terms of what they're looking at in the total contents of what Norm just said.
I know they were.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Jim.
So this is a game changer. And just to reiterate, 2 years ago, back in the turn of the 1900, when we came 18 to 1900, this line is in the same exact location as was the old Bamberger line, the line that connected between Salt Lake and Ogden. It was a major thoroughfare when there were 13 tracks in Ogden and a subway that connected all 13 tracks in subway or anywhere in the United States. If you came east to west, anywhere across the country, you would change trains in Ogden. This line was the Bamberger. So if you needed to go to Salt Lake, that's what this line was. And so I love the idea of Maida participating in a discussion. They're the ones that are leading out to this. Of course, the funding from the state is a lot of that's in place, but this is a game changer for moving the state's largest employer, the people who are involved in the largest employer in the state would move on this line. And it could potentially, through another type of a rapid transit from the south, you could basically have interconnectivity from Front Runner at any station. So people from Provo North could work at Hill Air Force Base and not have to touch a car or be on the road, the impact would be phenomenal. This is a wonderful thing. And then yesterday, in a Utah Defense Alliance meeting with all the commanders across the state, they had mentioned that HEAL still plans on growing in the next 3 years inside the fence another 25%. People, I think, south of Centerville don't understand the impact that HEAL Air Force Base has. It's a $7 billion a year impact to the Utah economy, $7 billion a year. And that's going to be the subcontractors that support HEAL Air Force Base are felt throughout the state, certainly throughout our Wasatch Corridor. This is really huge. And so we're really excited about it. And I think it's certainly a worthy project. I'm glad there's discussion on it. I also love that other slide about 84 and 89. I'll just say that one more time. It's one of the most beautiful things I've seen in my life. It's beautiful.
I just wanted to echo what Mayor Dandoy, Mayor Searle, and Commissioner Harvey said. UTA has been engaged in all of these, and we are at this level having these dialogues with MIDA directly to understand more of not only what they're looking at in terms of growth and anticipating that, but also the connectivity piece. So well said, everybody.
And Jory, just one more comment along that line. For the record, I'd like to let everybody know that Commissioner Harvey was not around at the time the Bamberger was an active rail line, okay, between Ogden and Salt Lake, although he may profess he was.
I was.
Very close.
I wrote on it.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. One more comment on that. We did letters recently to our Congressman Blake Moore to get this on federal funding, FY22. There's a community program, funding program. So that's in work right now also to try to fund this purchase. So
thank you very much for these comments. I know people that work in the Falcon Hill area, and they've personally asked me questions about how they can get to their jobs without having to drive. And so I think by us focusing on this, we're helping answer those questions, because those buildings up there are going up remarkably fast, and they're filled to the brim. Two people per office, just waiting to continue to expand. And so, you know, what is it, 5,000 or more people, and they're all active and looking to not just have to drive to get there. So love this.
They can ride their bikes and ride right onto the base using this all the way north to Ogden. So,
yeah, love it. We'll look into it, and we'll reach out to MIDA.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions on the projects? If not, I'll pass this off to Julie.
Can I make a comment, Jory?
Yes.
John Larson, representing Salt Lake City. I just feel obligated to make a comment for the I-15 expansion in Salt Lake County. Just from purely a technical perspective, I'm just concerned that we're reaching the point of, or maybe already past the point of, diminishing returns with widening. Just from, you know, my past experience of analyzing traffic flows on freeways, you get past 4 or 5 lanes each direction, and you just get to the point where you're just throwing money at widening with little or no benefit. In fact, in some places, just because of the misaligned expectations or creating new bottlenecks, you can actually throw billions of dollars at some of these widening projects and actually slow down the travel time. So I don't, you know, I'm not necessarily saying vote against a specific project, but I do think we need to have some really hard conversations about this. And I just wonder if, you know, the timing of, further widening when we haven't implemented, better management techniques like the managed motorways, project, I think, it'd be wise to focus more on the management of the facilities we already have. I believe, you know, that was the recommendation from the Central Corridor study. This seems to kind of go against that.
Thanks, John. It's my understanding that both the I-15 Farmington to Salt Lake environmental study will look at the managed lanes and managed motorways concept as long, and also the projects in the southern part of Salt Lake County are also looking to see how they can prepare for the managed motorways type in the system. So I think hopefully the environmental process will consider all those pieces, and I'd even open it up to Andrea Olson or Ben Hewitt to add anything on this.
Well, going back, go ahead.
Could you just define what you meant by managed motorways?
Ben, would you like, I saw you on mute.
I think the way I would describe it is there's many managed lanes strategies in the toolbox, and I think that Jory was correct that that's the type of thing that would be looked at during the environmental phase. So managed motorways itself has to do with ramp, you know, some aspects of ramp metering, but there's other managed lanes toolbox items, you know, high occupancy lanes and things like that that we've looked at in the past to make use of existing footprint and to speak to the comment.
Could I just add, in the previous survey on this point, I put a note in the chat. I agree that we need to use, it's fascinating to now be able with technology to create almost a marketplace on a highway. But at the same time, there's very, very substantial equity issues. And as we look at, you know, just to put it bluntly, I think about a family trying to make it and mom or dad needs to get to work. And all of a sudden, a more wealthy, you know, family who can afford the $250 to drive in the fast lane is the one that gets the space. And I think if you look at equity with taxpayers, and I just think there's a lot of really big issues over those tools. And in the end, we may have to do it, but I think we need to be doing it for the right reasons, and we need to be careful about actions and consequences. So I'm not saying, you know, I'm not at this point weighing in a way that would seek to direct staff one way or the other. I just want to make it clear that that issue is really key to me, and I know to many, and that we have to be really careful in making sure that we're flagging before, you know, these options before we go too far down the road. Pardon the pun.
Yeah, this is Reed Ewing. I've been on the Regional Growth Committee for all 11 years I've been in the Utah area, or Salt Lake City area. And in earlier widening discussions, we brought up the reality of induced travel and induced development, highway-induced development. And John Larson is so right about that. We have a much larger group now. So for those few who were part of those discussions years ago, we know that most of that capacity will be used up very quickly with new trips and longer trips and with sprawl development, which will occur as a result of the additional capacity. And when these projects would come up in the past, were not safety projects, not projects targeted on our centers in a polycentric Wasatch Choice for 2050 pattern, but just widening freeways. I would make that point, and then I would be the lone no voter on the amendments to the Regional Transportation Plan. And 25 years ago, there was a debate about the reality. It's kind of like climate change, the reality of induced travel, highway induced travel, and highway induced development. There's no debate now. And we've done at the University of Utah a fair amount of research on it. And you don't use up 100% of the additional capacity in the short or medium term, but in the long term, you basically don't gain anything. So that's a reality that maybe others will want to speak to. And maybe these widenings are somehow distinct from the widenings we talked about years ago, but they don't seem to be. So that's my comment.
Mayor Ramsey, can I make a comment on this as well, please?
Absolutely, please go ahead. Thank you to everyone for this discussion. I appreciate the discussion. We really do want to vet this out. Andrew, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I love and struggle with this conversation at the same time. And I will thank Professor Ewing because he has taught me and many others that providing additional highway capacity is not an ultimate, you know, indefinite solution. John noted this, John Larson from Salt Lake City noted this as well. And the way that I personally look at this, and I know that there's been a lot of review, extensive review that has happened through UDOT and the Transportation Commission, along with many others, about this project. And it is part of the regional transportation plan for a reason. It's to make sure that I-15 functions to its maximum capacity and efficiency. And if that was the only thing that was happening in our state and in this amendment, I would have really significant concerns, because that would represent us addressing the growth in demand simply through expecting that there was going to be a roadway-based solution. I just note that the amendment that's in front of this body today is not only the largest amendment, but it is also the most diverse amendment that we've ever considered before, in having a significant, the largest state investment in its history in transit on the parallel corridor on the front runner, a whole bunch of active transportation projects, and by the way, things that aren't necessarily in this amendment, but that are coming down the pike through HB 433 are additional transit projects, et cetera, as well as land use changes. So I do recognize that there is, when you take a project, any individual project, even a big one like this, it can be looked at and viewed in one way. But the way I think we as a staff look at this is the holistic approach to the way all of these projects work together through the overall system approach. So that's why, as a staff, we've gotten comfortable and are recommending approval of the entirety of the amendment to you. Each of you obviously has to make your individual decision, but that's our recommendation, to think broadly about this balanced approach.
Thank you, Andrew. Is there anyone else who wanted to speak to this before we go back to Julie? Okay, Julie, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. Thank you everyone for that conversation, and Jory for your review. There's just two more slides I had before asking you to make a motion. The first, since most projects are regional in scale, the technical considerations for this amendment focus on the vehicle hours of travel by county. You can see that there's an improvement to the overall vehicle hours of travel in all counties resulting from the collection of projects within this amendment. Even Morgan and Tooele County do also benefit. So as you can see in this table, the level one project, that MIDA rail trail, was for an information item. Level two will be acted here at the RGC meeting, and we will review the level three projects with the Box Elder, Weber, Davis, and Salt Lake COGS during the public comment period. Then the Regional Growth Committee will review those comments at our August meeting, with final approval of the level three projects by the Regional Council at the end of August. So So, Ms. Chairperson, that concludes our presentation. Jory and I are happy to answer any additional questions, whether they be related to the next steps. And then we would ask that RGC open the amendments up to public comment for the level two board modifications now. And then we would entertain a motion that the RGC approve the level two board modification project. So those were the land use and active transportation projects. I think there was like one road project relating to 7800 South. And then the Box Elder Brigham City overpass at the railroad tracks, and release the level three full amendment projects to a 30-day public comment period. So we're not asking for a motion today to approve the level three projects, just that those be open to the public comment period. And this is the motion that we're suggesting after the public comment period, or public comment for level two board modifications.
Thank you. I have a copy of that motion in front of me.
Okay, perfect. I'm going to I'll leave this next up.
See if there's anyone else that has anything specific to say to this. I appreciate the clarification that this motion will be on the level two board modification projects and releasing the level three full amendment projects and the air quality conformity determination as found in the draft air quality memorandum for public comment. This, you know, I appreciate the discussion that we've had on this, and I don't have anything different to say except that I agree if we were only looking at expanding I-15, that is not the answer to all of our transportation challenges that we have with the growth happening in our state. But this is such a comprehensive list of projects, and there are projects, you know, our friends to the north are pretty excited about theirs, and those of us in Southern Salt Lake County are pretty excited about the ones in our area. And I think this represents a lot of progress. And these have had the funding approved by the state legislature. And so with that, I would like to make the motion to approve the level two board modification projects and to release the level three full amendment projects and the air quality conformity determination as found in draft air quality memorandum 40 for public comment for amendment number three to the 2019 through 2050 RTP. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second that motion, Madam Chair.
Mayor and Commissioner, one minor technicality. Part of our process requires us to open this, the level two ones up to public comment during this meeting. So
So we have to open another public comment portion right now before the can be made?
Yeah, the level two ones, we do public comment during the meeting, and then the level threes will go out to a 30-day public comment, more formal comment period. So
okay, so really that sounds to me more like a public hearing, because we already had our public comment portion of this meeting. So we can call it public comment, but it sounds like a public hearing to me if we're opening that right now during this specific issue. Okay, we will open this to public comment. We'll press the hold button. We have a motion and a second, but before we have additional discussion or a vote, we will open this to public comment. If there's anyone here from the public who would like to speak to this, the motion that's been made, the time is now yours. Please turn on your camera so I know you'd like to speak. Okay, last call. All right, seeing none, thank you. I appreciate that, Jory. We're going to close the public comment portion. And we have a motion and a second on the table. Is there any additional discussion to this motion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of approving the motion that's on the table, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. This motion passes, and the level two board modification projects have been approved, and we're going to release the level three amendment projects to the public comment.
Mayor Ramsey, can I just briefly interject that the conversation about declining efficiency of additional lanes and induced demand gets at this central question of what kinds of improvements or changes can we make together that have long-term staying power in reducing congestion. And that is really very much part of the rationale for the first part of this agenda today. And if that is of ongoing interest by the RGC, you know, we can work together to try to figure out, you know, what are those improvements in the plan that have that sort of long-term staying power to reduce congestion and look really frankly at those kinds of questions.
Thank you. Okay, for the sake of time, we're going to move on to action item. We have another action item, number 5, and we have a presentation with this that is gonna be important for us to see. It's the Point of the Mountain Transit Locally Preferred Alternative. So the transit study for the Point of the Mountain kicked off in 2019 as a partnership of local governments and agencies, including Wasatch Front Regional Council, to explore the transit corridor options and improvements in Utah's fastest growing areas of Southern Salt Lake County and Northern Utah County. And the purpose of the study was to find a preferred alternative that meets the needs of the proposed land use and the communities in the area. Today, we're going to get a presentation and then request a vote to approve and support the locally preferred alternative in preparation for the environmental phase of the project that's coming up. And before I turn it over to Commissioner Holbrook, Trustee Holbrook. We have a lot of titles here and I know most of them, but anyway, I just said that wrong. Trustee Holbrook, before I turn this over to her to introduce, I personally must give a shout out to Patty Garber with UTA. She has done so much with this and been so great to work with as a local mayor who has been involved in this process because it's part of our area. I appreciate the invitation that my colleagues and I have had to be part of it as part of Wasatch Front Regional Council and also as a trustee for the Point of the Mountain State Land Authority. So much great work has gone into this, and I just have to say thank you to Patty for heading it up and bringing everyone together to come up with this preferred alternative. And with that, I will turn it over to Trustee Holbrook.
Thank you very much, Mayor and Madam Chair. I really appreciate the opportunity today, and I appreciate your perspective. I think that our staff has done an incredible job of navigating this. As we all know, it takes a lot of collaborativeness and creativity to get to these types of solutions where you're looking at some of this infrastructure and how it's going to best be utilized throughout this particular area. There were several options, obviously, and Patty is going to be doing this presentation and go into the nuts and bolts. But I did want to say one of the elements that I really think is really valuable is that this is structured so that it is best representative of these communities in this area and the connectivity pieces that they want to try to establish through this. It really is, the support of this has been really strong. It's just how do we navigate this and how do we get the best perspective for our dollars and address an issue that is going to have a huge amount of development coming to it in the near future. I think that my colleagues and I really have had some of these deep discussions on these elements because it is so community-based and it is such an opportunity to get in on the ground level, something that it's not always an opportunity in transit, and sometimes this allows us to really go in and ideally design something that's going to maximize that. So with that introduction, and again, super shout out to Patty, who has done such a tremendous amount of work. Thank you, Mayor. And with that, I'll turn it over to Patty, and then, of course, we'll be available for any questions you might have.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your support. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Trustee Holbrook and Madam Chair. So I am here, as was said, to tell you about the preferred alternative that we've selected for Point of the Mountain Transit and to hopefully receive a vote of support from this committee. And also thank you to all of the members of the committee for allowing me to be here. So just as a review, the purpose of the study was to identify a high capacity transit connection between Southern Salt Lake County and Northern Utah County and to connect to existing and future development areas. So the project started in August of 2019. We started with 5 alternatives, both rail and bus, and we whittled that down to 2 alternatives, which were also rail and bus. And at the end of last year, the preferred alternative was selected and recommended by both our technical advisory committee and our steering committee. And the selected alternative was a common segment to all of the alternatives, and the selected mode was bus rapid transit. So why did we make this selection? The primary reasons: one, the cost of bus rapid transit is about half the cost of rail. To construct and operate bus rapid transit is much easier than rail. And one of the key critical drivers for the project was timing and implementation, and bus rapid transit can be constructed much quicker than rail. So this figure shows you the preferred alternative. It is gold standard, high quality bus rapid transit, which I'll tell you about in a minute. So it connects Draper Front Runner to the north to Lehigh Front Runner to the south. It can include up to 10 stations, and it connects to key development areas, including the Point, the Highline Station, and also Lehigh with all the development that's going on down there. So gold standard bus rapid transit, what does that mean? That means almost entirely exclusive lane with very, so you can think of it as a train on rubber tires, basically. And the stations are very nice with high amenities and very nice design, similar to train stations. And they would also have loading fare collection and level boarding, and also transit signal priority. So the train would get priority at grade crossings. So these are some examples of bus rapid transit around the country. These bottom left pictures are from the Houston Silver Line, which opened last summer. And as you can see, it has exclusive lane with nice landscaping to separate it from the main traffic. And this is a transit signal priority there. The top right picture is the Cleveland Health Line. It was built to look like a train. And as it says here, the interior of most of these vehicles looks like a train on the inside. So it looks and feels like you're on a train. And then this bottom right picture is UVX in Utah County. So this is just a timeline to show you what we've been doing for approval and adoption of the LPA. So we started in December, went to Draper. I've been giving a lot of informational presentations just to educate everyone on the LPA and why we made that selection. So I've gone to the UTA Board of Trustees, the Point of the Mountain State Land Authority. They're one of our partners. Gone to both MAG and Wasatch Front as I'm here today. And both Lehigh and Draper in the next coming weeks are going to be adopting the LPA through resolutions. And then on June 2nd, I'll be going to the UTA Local Advisory Council to as another informational item. And then in approximately 2 years, when we're nearing the end of the environmental study, we will prepare a capital project plan, which allows us to move the project into design and further design and construction. And then as you're discussing today, the RTP will need to be amended, as right now it shows rail. And then the UTA Local Advisory Council will approve the LPA, and then the Board of Trustees will also adopt the LPA. So as for funding, and this is funding strictly for environmental and preliminary design, Wasatch Front has recommended $2 million for in STBG funds towards that. Last year in 2020, the legislature appropriated $750,000 for the study. And then this year, as was discussed earlier, $5 million was appropriated towards the environmental and preliminary design. And then UTA in our 2021 budget has $500,000 towards the project. So next phase, what we're moving into in environmental, that will include refinements to the preferred alignment, specifically, well, some of the key parts to be refined include elevated structures over Bangor and I-15, both at 146 South, we cross I-15, and then down in Lehigh on Triumph Boulevard to get over to the Lehigh Frontrunner. This will also include conceptual engineering of the full alignment, and then of course the environmental review. And then once we complete that, we'll be moving forward into securing more funding to complete design and move into construction. So that is just a brief summary of the preferred alternative and where we are. And if you have any questions, I would love to answer them.
Mayor, may I make an additional comment? Or Madam Chair, sorry. Thank you. I did want to also mention, you know, Patty has been working very hard at this, as you can tell. One of the things that was incorporated within that LPA for the dedicated lane bus rapid transit is the fact that it would have two stations as opposed to one, getting over the highway and, you know, both Bangor and I-15. Those are challenges in terms of elevation, and this is actually going to allow more opportunity to have stations within the Point of the Mountain area. And that I think is something that also impacted that decision making as well from the support of the LPA. And with that, that's all I wanted to make a comment on. So thank you.
This is Reed Ewing again. I've tried to turn on my camera, and for some reason it's not working. But if I could just spend a minute or two on BRT.
Absolutely.
Would that be okay?
Yes, go ahead, Reed. Thank you.
Thank you. And sorry about the camera. I don't get it. But I'm on the Point Working Group that's been looking at the BRT alignment through the prison, the former prison site, and brought up at our last meeting two before and after studies we've done. We did a before and after study of University Tracks line from downtown out to the university, and the fact that it took roughly 10,000 vehicles a day off of 400 South and parallel roads, which is just phenomenal. I've never seen a study that has produced such a profound impact. So 10,000, we also got the contract with UDOT to look at UVX, the Provo Orem BRT, and it also appears to take vehicles off the road, but not nearly at the same level, which is why I think at our last meeting of I think it was of this group, I said that rail and at least some forms of BRT are not comparable. And the BRT, UVX BRT between Provo and Orem is not full BRT and not the gold standard. It's not... it doesn't have its own lane for the entire length. It's about 50% BRT. And I know that and I'd like this confirmed, but I know that the idea is that this would be a gold standard BRT that would in fact be like a rubber tired train. And the other thing that has bothered me as a member of the Point Working Group is that there didn't seem to be in the land use plan for the Point Development Project enough recognition given to the power of TOD. If this functions, if this BRT functions like an LRT, it's going to have stations that have great potential for TOD, transit-oriented development. And by that, I mean mixed-use, dense, walkable, you know, high-amenity development right at the station and just around the station. And so I've had conversations with the consultants for the Point plan, and they seem to agree that this is going to be a crucial feature of their plan to particularly the southern station to be surrounded by dense mixed-use development. That's not the current development pattern. So those are two things that relate, and they all go back to our studies of the University Tracks line, which is now attracting, as you know, along 400 South, a lot of development that's dense and some mixed use, the UVX evaluation, which shows it has some benefit, but not nearly the benefit of light rail. That's it. Thank you.
Yeah, and I would just add, thanks, Reid, in response to that. And I know, because we've talked about this, this will be almost all exclusive lane. And we do have a TOD planning grant to look at the TOD for this project. So that will help with the TOD planning. So thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
I apologize. I just wanted to comment further, Reid. I appreciate your perspective on that. I looked at both of those studies, and I definitely agree that there is an ideal model to do. And then how do you balance that out? And the challenge with the rail, of course, is the cost, and then the fact that due to the elevation changes, as you're aware, on 4th South, when it transitions to 5th South, there are no stops along there because the elevation is too great. I think it's almost 1,000 feet, if I remember correctly. And so it is that kind of a balancing methodology, is if you can allow two stops through basically an LRT on rubber tires, then it does allow for greater ability to create TODs in those particular areas. And so all of your studies have been spot on, and I totally understand where you're coming from and all of that. I think that that's part of how I think that the stakeholders came to this conclusion, but it's incredibly valuable perspective, and I appreciate it as well.
Well, thank you. One thing on cost, 70, this is from years ago when I was doing this kind of work, but 70% of the cost of transit is labor, meaning operator, yes, cost, bus driver cost. And obviously that, if you consider only the capital cost, you'll always favor BRT. But if you consider the total cost, including operating cost, I'm not sure BRT is always the preferred alternative. Did you in your study consider operating costs, the fact that a four-car light rail train has one operator and a four-bus BRT has four operators?
Yeah, our estimates include operations and maintenance.
And am I right about the relative cost of the two when you include the operating cost?
If you look at, because we actually have a study, an internal study, looking at tracks and bus rapid transit, and based on cost, operation maintenance cost per mile, I actually have it here, per boarding, BRT is still less than tracks.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Reed and Patty and Beth. Thank you to all of you. And thank you for that perspective and that input. And I think I just want to echo that a lot went into trying to figure this out. And I think there were a lot of us that would have loved to have seen this be a tracks line, but it just wasn't going to work out to be that way. And I think the BRT has become the preferred alternative of the group. And I think the determination was it was going to end up for this specific project being the best option that we had. And so that is why it was chosen. And there was a lot that went into this. And that being said, I'm very supportive of this BRT project and hope that it's something that even if you maybe don't have anything to do with this specific area or this specific project, that you'll recognize that a lot of people have put in a lot of great work to figure this out, and that the consensus is that this is the preferred alternative. With that, I will open it up and see if there is a motion to approve the, I want to make sure I get this right. It's the preferred alternative for the Point of the Mountain. This is what it's called. I need a motion to approve the Point of the Mountain Transit Locally Preferred Alternative. If I could get a motion for that, that would be great.
Lynn Harvey, so moved.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Mayor. Can I get a second for that?
Second.
Sorry, I couldn't see who that was.
Robert McConnell.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, any additional discussion on this motion? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the motion to approve the Point of the Mountain Transit Locally Preferred Alternative as has been presented, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
This body and good luck, Patty. We know you've still got quite a bit of work ahead with this. A lot of people do, but thank you for heading this up. And to everyone who's been part of this, there's been a lot of work and input by staff at WFRC. And there's just been a lot of people who have been involved with this. Thank you. It's exciting to make this point. It represents a great deal of effort that's gone in to get to this point. So thank you. Okay. Our next meeting for the Regional Growth Committee will be August 19th, and we anticipate that will probably be in person. So hopefully we'll get to see each other at that point. Stand by for more information. We'll send it out, but we're thinking that will probably be in person. It'll be at 9:45. And we have Wasatch Front Regional Council meeting May 27th next week. We have Wasatch Front Economic Development District meeting June 2nd. There's a Joint Policy Advisory Committee meeting June 3rd. This is just for informational because I don't know if you have it in front of you. Active Transportation Committee June 9th and Transcom is June 17th. So once again, please let me welcome Laura and Ginger and GJ and everyone who's new with us. I hope I didn't leave anybody out, but if you're new with us, welcome. Thank you for being here. And we look forward to working with you. And with that, I am prepared to accept a motion to adjourn.
I so move.
Thank you. Can we get a second?
Second.
All right. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Thank you all for all of your good work and for your engagement in this important work. Thanks so much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
See ya.